the only place in the world. But this morning, I wanted to give shiur on the topic of the obligation of Trumos and Maisros in Eretz Yisrael, today and in the future. Perhaps it would have been better if I had titled the shiur today and in the past, because that might be more telling. But I was particularly interested in the topic because in my recent encounters, I've heard people speaking about how the demographics of the Jewish people are starting to shift, that within not so long it is conceivable that the majority of the Jewish people will reside within Eretz Yisrael. And some have claimed, and we'll explore this perhaps a little bit at the end, that this might in fact have ramifications for certain areas in halacha. It might change the status, potentially, of the status of Shemitah in Eretz Yisrael, as well as the status of Trumos and Maestros, which might be tied to that. It might actually change the nature of things. It might sort of raise the stakes of the game quite a bit. So I wanted to really explore the obligation of Trumos and Maestros and the various positions that are found in the Rishonim and the Shulchan Aruch as to what the status of the obligation of Trumos and Maestros is in our day. First, a very, very basic introduction. The Torah establishes an obligation of separating Trumos and Maestros in Eretz Yisrael. When a person grows certain kinds of produce, we'll talk very briefly about what kinds of produce, but the Torah at least explicitly articulates Dagon, Tirosh, and Yitzar, grain, wine, and oil, olive oil. So the Torah speaks about giving Trumos, the Torah speaks about separating Maestros. When one first gathers together and has processed the produce, the grain he has threshed and winnowed and piled up the kernels of grain, he has done what we call miruah hakri, or when it comes to wine and oil, once they have been, the grapes and the olives have been pressed and perhaps packaged as well, that's a question. So at that stage, there's an obligation of separating truma. It's called truma gedola. According to Torah law, and even the tiniest amount, chita achas poteres sakri, if you took one grain of the wheat, of the barley, there would be technically no obligation to separate any more truma. That, of course, is not the proper practice. The proper practice is to separate either 1/50th plus or minus a tenth of a fraction. So generally speaking, we will talk about separating 1/50th of the grain of the produce as truma gedola, which is given to the kohen. At that point, there are still another two ma'asros to separate. In the Shemitah cycle, so we work on a seven-year cycle of ma'asros. The Shemitah year itself is exempt from all trumas and ma'asros because the produce of the Shemitah year is ownerless. It is hefker, and hefker is exempt from trumas and ma'asros. In all 6 years, we separate ma'aser rishon, which is given to the Levi. He has to give 1/10 of that to the Kohen, known as Trumas Maaser or Maaser Min HaMaaser. And then, on top of that, we have to separate one additional Maaser. And these are all cumulative. So it's 10%. You give to the Levi a 10% of what's left after you separate a Truma. And then the next Maaser is 10% of what's left after you've separated the Maaser Rishon. In the first, second, fourth, and fifth years of the Shemitah cycle, we separate Maaser Sheni, which is taken to Yerushalayim and eaten or redeemed, and the money is taken to Yerushalayim where you purchase foodstuffs. And in the third and sixth years, the Maaser is given to the Aniyim. It's known as Maaser Ani. So that is the basic obligation of separating Trumas and Maestros. One who eats from grain in Eretz Yisrael at a time where the obligation of separating Trumas and Maestros is a Torah obligation, one who eats from that before Truma Gedola has been separated or the Maaser Rishon containing the Kohen's Trumas Maaser has been separated, is Chayev Misa Bidei Shamayim for eating what is known as Tevel. Once Truma and the Trumas Maaser have been removed from the produce, at that point, if one hasn't separated the additional Maaser, one does not incur the punishment of Misa Bidei Shamayim, but does theoretically incur the punishment of Malkus, of lashes, for eating Tevel. So that's essentially the obligation of tithing, of separating Trumas and Maaseros. The question is, what types of produce require separating from Trumas and Maaseros? So here we have several psukim in the Torah, almost all of which point in one direction, but there is one exception. The first one, which might be the exception, is a pasuk at the end of Parshas Bechukosai. It's the first pasuk on the sheet, the first source. V'chol ma'asar ha'aretz mizer ha'aretz mipri ha'etz la'shem hu kodesh la'shem. So the Torah says that all of the or the maser of the land, from the seed of the land, from the fruit of the tree, belongs to God. It is considered kodesh. So here it speaks about things that are zera haaretz and pri haaretz, which would seem to be perhaps pretty broad. That could include, zera haaretz should be able to include, in theory, grains, legumes, maybe even vegetables. Pri haaretz should be able to include all fruits that grow on the tree. However, in the other three places in the Torah where it's discussed, two of them which deal with Truma and one which deals with Maaser, so there the Torah is more specific. In Parshas Korach we read, Kol chelev yitzhar v'chol chelev tirosh v'dagon, reishisam asher yitnu l'Hashem l'chon nisatim. So all of the choice of the yitzhar, which is olive oil, and all of the choice of the tirosh, which is wine, and dagon, which is grain, so all of those, Hashem says, I have given to the Kohanim. This is in the section in Parshas Korach, which lists most of, not all of, but most of the gifts that were given to the Kohanim, most of the Matnos Kehuna. So here the Torah speaks of three species specifically. Oil, olive oil, wine, and grain. Grain is defined in Halacha, generally speaking, as the Chameshes Mine Dagon. We just finished Pesach. The term Dagon, or the term grain, as we would use it, applies to a whole series of mitzvos and prohibitions in the Torah. Matzah, Chametz, the prohibition of Chadash, mitzvah of Challah, midrabanan or not, the mitzvah, the berachas hamotzi, netilas yadayim, berachas hamazon, all of those are dependent upon the on what we define as grain, the chameshes mine dagon. And here too, the Torah singles out dagon is being obligated in truma. And similarly, in a pasuk that we read the last day of Pesach, the achalta lefnei Hashem elokecha b'makom asher yivchar l'shaken shem Hashem ma'asar deganecha. Again, the three things, Dagon, Tirosh, and Yitzhar. So the question is, how does one resolve, perhaps, the seeming contradiction between the Torah's presentation in Parshas Bechukosai, where it's described as Mipri Ha'etz and Zera Ha'aretz, although it doesn't say Kol Pri Ha'etz or Pri Kol Eitz, but how does one resolve the seeming contradiction between that and the other three places where the Torah seems to limit the obligation to Dagon, Tirosh, and Yitzhar? So this is, not surprisingly, a machlokas HaRishonim. The Rambam is the exception amongst the Rishonim. The Rambam rules that all fruits of the tree and all grains, the Rambam rules, are obligated in Truma Semaisus Min HaTorah. He understands that the Pasuk in Parshas Bechukosai is sort of the operative one. But the Rambam, I think, stands alone. Almost all Rishonim, Rashi, Tosos, the Ramban, assume that the obligation of Trumos and Maestros on a scriptural level is limited to these three things. The five, Chameshes Mine Dagon, or Dagon, however you define that, Tirosh and Yitzhar. In fact, the Ramban, in his commentary to Parshas Re'eh, on the third pasuk that's on the sheet, the Ramban goes further. The Ramban thinks that if you have grapes or you have olives which have not been pressed or processed, so the Ramban believes there's no obligation min haTorah of separating Trumas and Maisers. He believes that it is actually limited to the liquid form, the Tirosh and the Yitzhar. If you decide to eat grapes as they are, the Torah imposes no obligation of separating Trumas and Maisers. It's only when you actually convert it to wine. But according to these Rishonim, putting aside the question of grapes versus wine and olives versus olive oil, certainly all other produce outside of grapes, olives, and dagon, according to almost all of the Rishonim, are not obligated at all min haTorah and Trumas and Maisros. And the obligation of separating is rabbinic in nature. It is a chiyuf midrabanan. All Rishonim agree that the obligation of separating Trumas and Maisros from yerek, from vegetables, is only rabbinic in nature. So the machlokas is really about peros ha'ilan, whether or not they are obligated in Trumas and Maisros. Okay, now why does it matter so much? One is obligated to separate Trumas and Maisers anyway. So it matters, obviously, every situation, whether something is a Daraisa obligation or a Darabanan obligation, matters because of its implications for situations of Safek, situations of doubt. And this is an issue that is discussed in a number of contexts in the Poskim. One particularly significant area, the Kashrus organizations do not seem to acknowledge this, but I did a little Googling to see, and every Kashrus organization has its page on Trumas of Maestros of produce from Eretz Yisrael that you purchase in America. I have not seen yet one mention the fact that according to the Rambam and according to the Shulchan Aruch, and there basically isn't a single opinion on the page of the Shulchan Aruch of any standard achron that disagrees with this is that produce that is exported from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz is not obligated in Trumos and Maisros. Now, there are poskim, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Aaron Kotler, who, and before them a number of achronim who challenged perhaps the position of the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, but it's hard to believe that no one makes note of the fact that the Shulchan Aruch says there is no obligation, and that the Shulchan Aruch does not attach any caveats. Where the achronim pushed back was on the suggestion, how could the Rambam say such a thing? It seems a little crazy. The Gemara actually doesn't say it with respect to Trumas and Maisers. The Gemara only says it with respect to challah. That if you export grain and then you make it into a dough in Chutz La'aretz, so then it is exempt from Trumas and Maisers because the obligation of challah only sets in when you turn it into an isa, when you mix the water into the flour. So therefore, by logic, once it's only being made into an isa, in Chutz La'aretz, you don't have to separate challah. By extension, the argument then is made is that when are you technically obligated to separate Trumas and Maisros on produce? When you have what's called the Gemar Malacha, when you finish the processing. And therefore, many Acharonim want to argue that even according to the Rambam, if the produce was, the processing was completed in Eretz Yisrael and then exported, the obligation sets in when it's in Eretz Yisrael, and then when you export it, the obligation doesn't disappear. But even if one accepts, the Rambam doesn't say any such thing, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't offer any such qualification. Even if one accepted as such, there may be many things that don't fully ripen or aren't fully processed till they're exported to Chutz La'aretz. So if you buy an Israeli wine, that's true. That was completely prepped. It was bottled and processed, you know, squeezed, processed, bottled, all completed the processing in Eretz Yisrael, then Trumas and Maisers would have to be separated. But if there are fruits or vegetables that, you know, ripened on the way over on the boat being shipped from Israel, so those would not be obligated in Trumas and Maisers. And it certainly matters in this case if the obligation of separating Trumas and Maisros in Eretz Yisrael, either today or on a particular kind of produce, is only rabbinic in nature, so that means in situations of doubt, it is quite reasonable to argue that there's no obligation at all to be concerned about Trumas and Maisos if you don't know one way or the other, because it could very well be treated as Sveika the Rabbanan Lakula. Okay, so that is really what I would like to explore now. Having given you the sort of the basic introduction to what are Trumas and Maisros and the obligation to separate and what is Chayiv, I'd like to actually explore the obligation today to separate in Eretz Yisrael. In other words, today we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, we don't have Karbanos, and the question is, does that or something else about the nature of Eretz Yisrael today have any bearing upon the obligation to separate Trumas and Maisros? Let's keep it simple. Produce that is grown in Eretz Yisrael, that is one of the three species that everybody agrees is potentially obligated in Trumas and Maisros min HaTorah. Let's say we're talking about wine, olive oil, wheat, barley. If it's grown in Eretz Yisrael and it's eaten in Eretz Yisrael, what is the nature of the obligation of separating Trumas and Maisros? So there are at least three opinions in the Rishonim as to the nature of this obligation, which, as you might imagine, is how do you have three opinions? The choice is d'oraisa or d'rabbanan. That usually leaves you two opinions. I mean, you could say suffek, but that's not one of the opinions that I'm going to present. So the question is, how do we get three opinions? So we'll see how we get three opinions. But there are two very important questions about which the discussion in the Rishonim revolves. The first one, which might be shocking from to be spoken about at a convocation which is dedicated in some way to Zionism, is, does Eretz Yisrael have any Kedusha today? Question is there Kedusha Sa'aretz? Because presumably, if there's no Kedusha Sa'aretz, one would think, and it's a reasonable assumption, that any of the agricultural mitzvos hatluyos ba'aretz, it would be hard to imagine them being obligatory min haTorah if there is no kedusha sa'aretz. If you just think back historically, the agricultural mitzvos, the mitzvos hatluyos ba'aretz, were not binding before they entered Eretz Yisrael. In Moshe Rabbeinu's time, if someone had exported Jaffa oranges to the Jews in the desert, and they were consuming them, there would have been no obligation to separate Trumas and Maisros. That would be very, very clear. The obligation only sets in at some point after they enter Eretz Yisrael, which comes together with a process known as Kiddush Haaretz, of sanctifying the land. In the case of the first entry into Eretz Yisrael, at least the Rambam explains, the sanctification was through kibush, through conquest. So if, in fact, one were to argue there is no Kedusha Sa'aretz today, so then the possibility would naturally emerge from that, that the obligation of trumas and maisers is at most rabbinic in nature. Okay, so let's take a look first at a mission in Abios. It's very, very much near the end. It's an interesting Mishnah. Amar Rabbi Yehoshua, the first source on the Roman numeral 2. Shamati shemakriv en af al pi she'en bayis. I heard, and shamati in the Mishnah doesn't mean he was in the base medrash and he heard the hak. Shamati means I have a received tradition, a shmua. It's a technical term. I have a tradition, shemakriv en af al pi she'en bayis, that you can bring karbanos even though there's no base hamikdash. In other words, you could go up on the har bayis, and you could go to the makom ha-mizbeach, you'd have to presumably need some type of mizbeach, you need something to throw the blood on, but you could go inside what would be the confines of the Azara, and you can bring karbanos today. At least Rabbi Yehoshua was born before the Churban, he served as a Levi in the Beis HaMikdash, as did his co-arguer, Rabbi Eliezer. They both Levim who served in the Mikdash, and then they lived post the Churban where they were more prominent individuals. So Rabbi Yehoshua says, I have received tradition, Shemakriven afal pishein bayis, ve'ochlen katshe kadashim afal pishein klein. And you can eat katshe kadashim, even though it's almost a deliberate anachronistic formulation. Kilaim, if you recognize from the Mishnah and Ezo Makoman, in the Beis HaMikdash, they didn't have curtains around the Azara. They have solid stone walls. Where did they have kilaim? In the Mishkan, in the Midbar. But they uses the term. Even though there are no walls around the Azara, if you mark the area, the surveyor's line, you're in the Azara, you can eat Kadshe Kadashim there, even though there are no kilaim, there are no walls. Kadshim Kalim Umaser Sheni, which must be eaten within the walls of Yerushalayim, Afal Pishen Choma. You just have to mark the boundaries of Yerushalayim. It's not the Suleiman the Great's wall that we have today. It's totally different. You mark the boundaries of Yerushalayim. You can eat your Maser Sheni there today. You can eat your Kachim Kalim after you bring your Karban and start World War III. So you can do that all today according to Rabbi Yehoshua. Fine. And what does he say? Afal Pishen Choma, Shekedusha Rishona, Kitsha L'Shaita, V'Kitsha L'Asad Lava. Now, I'm not going to explore exactly the connection because there's kind of a gap, but he says that the Kedusha Rishona was eternal Kedusha, meaning the Kedusha of the Mikdash, the Kedusha perhaps of Yerushalayim, that is an eternal Kedusha, and it would seem that it comes from the time of the Shlomo HaMelech's dedicating the Beis HaMikdash and the city of Yerushalayim around it. That's what Rabbi Yehoshua says. So Rabbi Yehoshua claims that we can still bring karbanos today because Yerushalayim, the Beis HaMikdash, still retain their Kedusha. I'm going to come back to that aspect at the end, but it's Rabbi Yehoshua's formulation that the Gemara actually sort of jumps off with. From Rabbi Yehoshua, the Gemara infers that not only does the Beis HaMikdash and does Yerushalayim retain its original Kedusha, but so does Eretz Yisrael. Now one could, as we're going to see at the end very briefly, separate the two, but nonetheless, that's what the Gemara in Megillah and the Gemara, I think, in Arachin does with this statement of Rabbi Yehoshua. He believes that Kedusha Rishona from the time of Yehoshua ben Nun when they conquered the land was Kidsha L'Shaita, V'Kidsha L'Asalava. It was both for its time and it was eternal. So according to that, if that were the case, if both we accept Rabbi Yehoshua's opinion and Rabbi Yehoshua meant what the Gemara construes him to say in Megillah, so then this aspect of the discussion should be over. Eretz Yisrael has its full Kedusha today. We can, as Zionists, we can breathe easy and we can move on. However, it's not so simple. The Gemara in Arachin is commenting on a Mishnah that speaks about something known as Batei Arechoma. The Torah says in Parshas Bahar that if someone owns a city with a wall around it and they sell it, they sell a house in the city which has a wall around it, you have, as opposed to a field which automatically returns to you in the Yovel, Batei Arechoma have the inverse did. You have exactly 365 days to redeem it, and if you don't, it becomes permanently owned by the person to whom you sold it. So the Mishnayos talk about you can imagine what slumlords were doing. Of course, the guy wants to redeem his house, and the year is up. He's got the money, and you go hide because you don't want him to redeem the house, so you can keep it permanently. That's what the Mishnah speaks of that. Until Hillel made a takana that you could basically give the money to the Beis Din and break the door down and take your house back. Okay, so it's nothing. Jewish slumlords are nothing new in Jewish history. So now the Gemara says, one second. In Hillel's time, there was Yovel. What's going on? How could there be Yovam? So here's what the Gemara talks about. Does the Jubilee year, does the Shnas HaChamishim, did it still exist in the time of Hillel? So the Gemara says the following. Tanya, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yosei, Lama, I'm sorry, I jumped ahead on that. I'm going to come back to that point. That belongs to the next part. Here the Gemara is still going to talk just about the Kedusha Rishona, whether it was Kitcha L'Shaita, and permanently or not. So Tani Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yosei, Lama Manu Chachamim Es Eilu, Shekesha'alu B'nei HaGola Matzu Eilu V'Kitchum. The Mishnah there, after talking about Hillel's Takana, lists the cities that were considered Batei Arei Choma, that have this law that applies to them. So the Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yosei says, why did the Chachamim list these cities? Shekisha'alu b'nei ha'gola mitzau elu v'kitchum. When in the days of Ezra, when the Jews returned from Bavel, from Babylonia, they found these cities that were walled, and they sanctified them as batei arechoma, so that these laws would apply to them. Aval rishonos batlu mishabatla kedusha sa'aretz. The original wall cities that had been walled from the time of Yoshua ben Nun, when they first conquered Eretz Yisrael, the Kedusha of those walls was gone. Why? Kasavar, Kedusha Rishona Kitcha L'Shaita Velo Kitcha L'Asid Lava. Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yosei, in this Brisa, believed that the original Kedusha of Yoshua ben Nun disappeared. As the Rambam, the way the Rambam explains, and the Rambam, if it matters, paskins that way. The first Kedusha was the result of war, of conquest, and when Eretz Yisrael was also conquered from the Jews, it lost its Kedusha. Whereas the second Kedusha was not through conquest, it was through consent, and Kedusha Bepeh, and that's why it retains its eternal Kedusha. That's what the Rambam says. But for our purposes, at least, we have one opinion here, that Kedusha Rishona Kitcha L'Shaita V'lo Kitcha L'Asad Lava. Now, that doesn't tell us what happened at this time of the destruction of the second temple. Did the Kedusha remain there, or did it disappear as well? So I already just mentioned quickly the Rambam's opinion that the second Kedusha was eternal. Kedusha Shnia of Eretz Yisrael was eternal because it wasn't through conquest, it was through permission of King of Melech Koresh of Cyrus, who permitted them to return to Eretz Yisrael. Now, so therefore, so far, what we have, at least, we have two opinions. Number one is that the original Kedusha was eternal. The second is that the original Kedusha was nullified through conquest, but there was a second Kedusha, and let's assume for the moment that Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yosei does hold that that second Kedusha was in fact eternal. There is, however, appears to be a third opinion in the Gemara. The Gemara in Yevamos, and I'm going to not discuss extensively, records a debate between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan whether or not Truma Bisman Hazeh. Now remember, Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan were Amoraim who lived in the 3rd century Eretz Yisrael, which means after the destruction, long after the destruction of the Second Temple. Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Reish Lakish have a debate whether or not the obligation of Truma Samaisers Bisman Hazeh is the Oraisa or the Rabbanan. Okay, so now we're getting a little warmer in terms of our topic. And the Gemara here is a little bit surprised. It says, V'sava Rabbi Yochanan Truma Bizman Hazeh Doraisa? Does Rabbi Yochanan really hold that Truma Bizman Hazeh is Midoraisa? And then they go on to quote a Braisa, I'm not going to explain now, it belongs to Yoridea, Hilchos Taruvos, mixtures, that demonstrates that Rabbi Yochanan assumed that Truma was only Midorabbanan. So the question is, how do you resolve the contradiction between these two? So the Gemara, when it gets to the end, after, if you go to the third to last line in this source, in Yevamos Pei Beis Amud Aleph, towards the end of the line, Elon Rabbi Yochanan Kasha. So the Gemara says, no. There's no contradiction. Hamani Rabbanan hi. When Rabbi Yochanan said that, when he taught us a halacha that suggested that the obligation of Trumas and Maestros is only rabbinic, he was working according to the Rabbanan, according to what we would call the majority opinion. But Va'ana da Amre, when he said that Truma Bizman Hazeh is the Raisa, he was holding like Rabbi Yosei. The Tanya B'Seder Olam. Seder Olam is this Tana'itic work of history which is attributed to Rabbi Yosei. Asher Yarshu Avosecha V'Rishta. Yerusha Rishona Ushnia Yeshlahem Ushlishis Ein Lahem. So Rabbi Yosei is quoted as saying that Eretz Yisrael has a Yerusha Rishona in the days of Yoshua. It also has a Yerusha Shnia in the days of Ezra, meaning it was sanctified twice, but Yerusha Shlishis Ein lahem. There is no third sanctification because the second kedusha was eternal. So Rabbi Yochanan, when he earlier in the sugya said that truma bisman hazeh is doraisa, that was according to Rabbi Yosei. When he stated a halacha that suggested that truma was only the rabbanan, it was according to the chachamim. In other words, the chachamim believe that the first kedusha disappeared, the second kedusha disappeared, presumably either with the Chorban or with the exile of most of the Jewish people during the Second Temple period. And Rabbi Yosei believes that the second kedusha was eternal. In which case, we now actually have three opinions here: whether kedusha rishona was kedusha l'shaita v'kedusha l'asadlava, or perhaps kedusha shniya was kedusha l'asadlava, but kedusha rishona was betela, or perhaps even kedusha rishona and kedusha shniya were both batlu, and therefore all that's left is Eretz Yisrael now without kedushas haaretz, certainly min haTorah. So then the only question is, and we'll come back to this in a little bit, is, well, how do we paskin? If we paskin that either of the first two opinions, then Eretz Yisrael still has Kedusha today, and that certainly would not be an impediment for the obligation of Trumas and Maisers being scriptural. But then, yes, so. No, the two opinions in Arachin, if you read to the end, I didn't read the whole thing, are either Kedusha Rishona as La'asid or Kedusha Shniya as La'asid. And in Yevamos, it's Shniya or Shlishis. But they're different. It's a machlokas at Tanayim. It's clear that there are three opinions amongst the Tanayim. Yes.
But normally, Yerusha never vanishes.
What, Kedusha? They don't mean in terms of ownership. The Gemara is using the term loosely. Yerusha refers to the process of kedusha that's an outgrowth of taking possession of the land, not inheritance, but rather possessing. So the second issue. So that's one issue, which is kedusha sa'aretz. The second issue is really an external consideration, which could be true even if Eretz Yisrael still has kedusha. So I mentioned before that the Gemara in Arachin was troubled. The Mishnah assumes, based upon Hillel's Takana, that the laws of Yovel still applied in Hillel's time. So the Gemara says, one second. It says, Mishagalu, the first source on the Roman Rule 3, Mishagalu Shevet Reuven, Veshevet God, Vachatzi Shevet HaMenashe, during the time of when the northern kingdom still existed, probably around the probably the third quarter of the 8th century BCE, when one of the Assyrian kings exiled already, the first exile of part of the northern kingdom, when he exiled the 2.5 tribes in Eiver HaYarden, at that point, Butlu Yovlos, Yovel disappeared. In other words, when 2.5 of the Shvatim were gone, there's no more din of Yovel. Why? Shenemar, Ukrasem Doror Ba'aretz L'chol Yoshveha. Bizman Shekol Yoshveha Aleha, V'lo Bizman Shegalu Mitzasan. Only when all of the inhabitants are in the land, and not when some of them are exiled. Now, it doesn't mean all of the inhabitants. If that's the case, every Jew would have to be in Eretz Yisrael in order for there to be Yovel. And I presume that there were Jews who, we don't know, but probably some Jews who lived outside of Eretz Yisrael, even in Bayis Rishon. Probably not too many, but some. So that Kol Yoshveha presumably means Rov Yoshveha, a majority. Or maybe, possibly. But then the Gemara says further, Yachal hayu aleha vehein me'uravin. You might think that if all the Jews were there, but they were mixed up. In other words, people weren't divided up according to their shvatim, but rather the Yeshevet Binyamin b'Yehuda v'Yeshevet Yehuda b'Binyamin. All the tribes are mixed up, not each one living on their own designated land. You might think Yehiyovel Noe Talma Lomar l'chol yosheveha bizman sheyosheveh kitikunam v'lo bizman shehein me'uravin. So the Gemara says that if in fact, not only, it's not enough to have all the inhabitants in the land, you have to know what your shevet is, you have to be living in the chelek in Eretz Yisrael of that shevet, otherwise, min haTorah, there is no din of Yovel. The Gemara then goes on to challenge this based upon the existence of Eved Ivri in the time of Yirmiyahu HaNavi, because the nation made a bris to free their slaves. We read it as the Haftorah Parshas Mishpatim when it's not one of the Arba Parshios. So the Gemara says there's no Eved Ivri if there's no Yovel. How could they have Eved Ivri? So the Gemara answers that actually there was a brief restoration of Yovel before the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, because Yirmiyahu HaNavi went on a mission to Chutz La'aretz and he brought back members of all of the tribes and resettled them in Eretz Yisrael in their proper place. So in Yirmiyahu HaNavi's time, during the days of Yoshiyahu and later until the destruction and the exile of Nebuchadnezzar, there actually was Kol Yoshveha, and it was Kitikunam. They were representatives of all the 12 Shvatim in Eretz Yisrael in their proper Nachala, which obviously certainly disappeared after Bayis Rishon. Now, I'm not going to explore it, but there is a major machlokas of Rishonim, starting with Rashi and the Balei HaTosos in Gittin Daf Lamed Vav Amud Aleph in the Sugya of Prizbol, as to whether or not during the Second Temple period, there was Yovel Min HaTorah. In other words, did you have the requirements there? And that's a big machlokas I'm not going to explore. Suffice it to say, once the Second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, once again, you didn't have Kol Yoshveha, and you certainly did not have Shvatim Kitikunam. So nobody's questioning after the destruction of the Second Beis HaMikdash whether there's Yovel. There isn't. But there is a machlokas HaRishonim, whether any Yovel that existed in Bayis Rishon, and it does appear there was Yovel, but whether that was only rabbinic in nature to keep the Shemitah cycle count, or there was actually Yovel Midoraisa. But let's assume for the moment that there's no Yovel today, because number one, you don't have a majority of the inhabitants, a majority of the Jewish people living in Eretz Yisrael, and number two, even if you did, not too many people really know what Shevet they're from, and we're not terribly sure that we have representatives of the 12 Shvatim, and we're certainly not staking a claim to real estate. That would also create a different kind of war. If I said I'm from Shevet Yehuda, I'm tag proven, I'm taking back land for Shevet Yehuda as their representatives, I don't think that would work so well. So the bottom line is there is no Yovel today. The question is, does that have any impact upon any of the other mitzvos in Eretz Yisrael? And so here, there is a Gemara in Nida. I think in the interest of time, I'm not going to read the Gemara. The Gemara there discusses the possibility of Chala and Truma, one being the Raisa and one being the Rabbanon, Bisman Hazeh. Chala has its own special requirement. Chala requires Bevo Achem El Haaretz. The Gemara says it too requires Bias Kulchem. It's not the same drasha as by Yovel, at least it's not from the same pasuk, the exact same words, but it seems to be the same idea. So the Gemara says that Chala requires Bias Kulchem. Truma does not require, it sounds like, it's not clear whether this is the conclusion, Truma doesn't require Bias Kulchem. On the other hand, Chala is more obligatory in Eretz Yisrael because when they entered Eretz Yisrael in the time of Yeshua, from the minute they entered, you had to separate Chala min HaTorah, but Truma was only obligatory once you had the 14 years of Kibush v'Chiluk, the conquest, and actually the division of the land. So the Gemara says that it could go in both directions, whether you would say Truma today is Doraisa and Chala is Drabanan, or vice versa. The Rambam writes the following. In Hilchos Truma, the Rambam paskins there's no Yovel today, he quotes the Gemara Arachin straight up. That's the first Rambam. You look at the second Rambam, and that's the most puzzling of the Rambams. The Rambam says the following, HaTruma bizman hazeh, v'afilu b'makom shechaziku ole bavel. The Rambam says that Truma today, and the Rambam is assuming that the first Kiddush HaSa'aretz of Yoshua was Betela, but the second, he says, is eternal. So he says that Truma Bizman Hazeh, even in a place where the Olei Bavel we conquered, Va'afilu Bimei Ezra, even in the days of Ezra, even in the days of Bayesheni, the Rambam says, Eina Min HaTorah Ela Midivreihem. Rambam says, Truma, even in Second Beis HaMikdash, was only Midirabbanan, and certainly today. She'ein Lecha Truma Shel Torah Ela Be'eretz Yisrael Bovad. Truma is only Midaraisa in Eretz Yisrael. Uvizman She'kol Yisrael Sham. She'nemar Ki savou bias kulchem. Now there are a couple of problems here. Number one, it seems to be against the Gemara in Nida that I didn't read but I summarized. And number two, even more problematic, is that there is no pasuk in the Torah by Truma of ki savou. Some have amended the Rambam's girsa to read bevo achem, which is the pasuk by Chala. The only problem is that makes even less sense. I don't have time to explore what the basis of the Rambam Shita is. There is a very long essay, the first essay in the third chelek of the Beis Halevi, of the Shu'at Beis Halevi, where he discusses all the Shitas of the Rishonim extensively, as well as the explanation for how the Rambam got to where he got. But this is what the Rambam says. He says it has to be ki savo bi'as kochem, ki shahayu bi'irusha rishona, uchemosha hein asidim lachzor bi'irusha shlishis. When we will have the ultimate redemption. But lo ki shahayu bi'irusha shniya, shahaysa bime Ezra. Not like it was in the days of Ezra, shahaysa bi'as miktsasan. Only part of the Jewish people returned, ulefikach lo chiva osan min ha-Torah. And then the Rambam says, strangely enough, but I don't want to talk about this, V'chein yero ali, shehu adin b'maisros, she'ein chayavim b'zman hazeh ela midivreim k'truma. It's a very striking line. The idea that you could be exempt minat Torah and truma, but maybe you could be chayav and maisros. He thinks they're the same. But the question is, why did the Rambam even think it was possible that they weren't the same? Okay. So the bottom line is that the Rambam does not say that Kedusha Sa'aretz doesn't exist. He assumes Kedusha Shniyah, Kitcha L'Shaita, V'Kitcha L'Asalavo. Eretz Yisrael, that those parts that were reconquered by Ezra, you have to figure out which parts those were. Those parts that were inhabited by Ezra and the Jewish people in the beginning of the Bayis Sheni, those have Kedusha Sa'aretz. And the fact that there's no obligation today of separating Shumas and Maisos is not because there's no Kedusha, but it's because we don't have Bias Kolchem. Now, when we draw our attention to the Tur in the Shulchan Aruch, the Tur actually cites three opinions. And it's the first source under Roman rule 4. The Tur says, "Mipnei she'ein noagim trumos u'maisros baratzos elu, ein ritzoni laharich bahem." I don't want to dwell at great length in Trumas and Maisos because there's no Trumos there. It's very interesting. In this Simon in Yoredeya, Simon Shin Lamed Aleph, the Torah says he doesn't want to go on at length, and it may not be that long. But in the Shulchan Aruch, there are 140 plus Seifim in the Simon. I guess the Mechaber lived in Eretz Yisrael, so he felt the need to elaborate a little more. But the Torah says, I'm not going to dwell at length. Then he says, "Aval pisha matzino bekama mekomas betalmud shayim afrishin trumas u'maisus bechutz la'aretz." Even though in the Gemara, the Mishnayos that talk about separating trumas and bavel in Ammon and Moab and Mitzrayim and so on, he says, "Peirush ri haynu dafka bemekomas akrovim la'aretz Yisrael kigon Ammon u'Moav u'Mitzrayim u'bavel shachivim chacham u'trumas u'maisus." Gzeira atu Eretz Yisrael. Only in places that were close to Eretz Yisrael, where the rabbis made a gzeira in Chutz Laretz, in the areas that were nearby because of Eretz Yisrael. Avol, be'elah ha'makomas ha'rachokim, in Europe, in Spain, where the Torah was writing, ha'rachokim Eretz Yisrael lo chivum. Avol, the Eretz Yisrael no'agim, they apply. And now he says, v'kasav ha'rambam, she'eno elamid rabbanon, she'afilu bime Ezra lo haya de'oraisa, even in the days of Ezra, trumas u'maisus with the rabbanon, kevan shalo alukulam, v'lo hayu kol yoshvei aleha. Vinirali, the Torah disagrees. The Loshaya Haitaima Elagabechala Dhsiba Babalachem Vidarshina Mine Bibias Kochem. He says the Gemara only has that drasha by Chala where you have a Pasuk. Avalinyan Trumas Amaisus Lobainan Shihe Koyoshva Aleha. Then he says, Umikomakom, Ika Manda Amar, and the Beis Yosef doesn't identify anybody, but Rashi in several places in Shas uses the language which is similar to this, not with respect to Trumas and Maisos, but with respect to the Shemitah year, which is, Mikomakom, Mi Ika Manda Amar, Deidana, Enal of the Rabbanon, Shabbatla Kedusha Sa'aretz Mishagalu Mimena. There are those who say that Trumas and Maisos in Eretz Yisrael is only the Rabbanon because the Batla Kedusha Sa'aretz. Aval repeirish shehem da oraisa the kedusha shniya shekidshu bime Ezra lo batla, and the Rambam's reason he thinks is wrong. There's no such thing as bias kolchem by truma. So there are three opinions then that the Torah cites as to the nature. Now you want to the three opinions. How do you have three opinions? The oraisa, the rabbanon, or what? So one opinion says that truma semaisus bizbanazeh is da oraisa. The second opinion says it's the rabbanon because you don't have bias kolchem, and the third opinion says it's midrabbanon because Eretz Yisrael doesn't have kedusha. Now, even though I think it doesn't actually make a difference, Bizman Hazeh, and even when the majority of the Jewish people will be residing in Eretz Yisrael, which could be in just a few years, I don't actually think it will have an impact upon the halacha. Many people have suggested, but once you have Rov Yoshvei Aleha, now everything changes. Yovel changes, Shemitah changes, Trumas and Maisos change. So the simple interpretation of the Gemara is that that's not correct. It's not enough to have a majority of the Jewish inhabitants. You actually have to have Shevet Yehuda where it's supposed to be, and Shevet Binyamin, and Shevet Naphtali, and Shevet Dan. And therefore, it won't matter. It won't matter if a majority of the Jews live in Eretz Yisrael. Nothing is going to change, even if you hold like the Rambam. If you hold, by the way, that the reason why Trumas HaMaisis is only the Rabbanon and Shemitah is only the Rabbanon, if you hold that way, is because there's no Kedushas Aretz, that's certainly not going to change until there is a formal process of Kedusha, not to be spoken about at the moment, but there is theoretically some type of a formal process, it would seem. How does the Shulchan Aruch rule? So the Mechaber writes, Bizman Hazeh, Afilu b'makom she'achziku ba'olei bavel, v'afilu b'imei Ezra, ein chiyuv trumas u'maisus min ha'Torah, ela midivreihem. So the Mechaber paskins, it's only midrabanan. Now, which opinion is he following? M'pnei she'nemar, ki savo'u mashma b'yas kulchem v'lo b'yas mitzasan k'mo she'hoisa b'imei Ezra. So the Mechaber paskins, straight up like the Rambam, that there was no Trumas of Maestros, there was no Yovel from the time, presumably no Yovel from the time already of Ezra. And everything that they did, even in Bayis Sheni, was only Midrabanan. The Ramah comes along and wants to disagree. He says, V'yesh cholkim, u'sfir lehu d'chayavim ach shaberetz Yisrael, b'trumas of Maestros midaraisa, ach lo nahagu kein. The Ramah says, you know, following the Balei Tosfos, really it should be, but he says that actually, that is not the minhag. Okay, so then bottom line is that there are three opinions that the Torah cites as to the nature of Trumas HaMaisos, Zman HaZeb, Eretz Yisrael, two of which are the Rabbanon, which is the Raisa, and the Shulchan Aruch's conclusion that Trumas HaMaisos are only mid the Rabbanon in Eretz Yisrael, and even as we hope for the ingathering of the exiles, it will remain the Rabbanon, certainly according to the Rambam, and presumably also won't have, if you hold like the other opinion, that it's the Rabbanon, if you don't have Kiddush HaSa'aretz, until we have an active Kiddush HaAretz, or at least until we have the Shvatim living where they're supposed to be and being able to identify our Shevet. I wanted to just close with one comment, what I consider to be one of the most powerful passages in Mishneh Torah, and certainly in this topic. It's on a day that's dedicated to Zionism. It might be taken perhaps a little bit as an anti-Zionist message, but it's not meant as so. Eretz Yisrael is certainly central for the Jewish people, both as a haven for Jewish people and as a spiritual center, certainly in this day and age. Maybe 50 years ago it wasn't so, but today it's certainly true. Ki mitzion teitzei Torah udvar Hashem Yerushalayim. There is a well-known question that the Balei HaTosfos ask in Ksubos. In theory, a spouse can force their spouse to make aliyah, and if not, they're entitled to either divorce them without paying ksuba or to receive a get with a ksuba and then to make aliyah. But the Balei HaTosfos say we don't do that. We're not knowing this halacha. And one of the reasons that's offered is offered by Rabbeinu Chaim, not the Rav's grandfather, or not the Chaim of Brisk, but the Tosafist Rabbeinu Chaim, who says that because we're not able to be sufficiently careful in all the mitzvos that are tluyos ba'aretz, we're afraid we're going to violate them, and therefore we can't really live in Eretz Yisrael. And this particular passage, it seems like a strange teretz, but really reflects the special properties of Eretz Yisrael that we will read, not this coming Shabbos, but the week after, in Achrei Mos Kedoshim. When the Torah speaks about when a nation, whether it was the Canaanites or whether it would be us, would defile the land, would not observe Torah properly. So the Torah warns us, "V'lo saki eschem ha'aretz b'ta'amachem osa kasher ka'as agay lefnechem." Eretz Yisrael has to be treated with proper kedusha. In other words, Eretz Yisrael is not just that it is holy land, but it requires avodas Hashem. It requires a proper observance of the mitzvos. And without the proper observance of the mitzvos, there is little point in being in Eretz Yisrael. The passage in the Rambam that I refer to comes back to an earlier point. The Rambam, in the last source on the sheet, says, "V'lama ani omer b'mikdash v'Yerushalayim kedusha rishona kitchalased lavo." But if a kedusha shar Eretz Yisrael, with respect, the Rambam said, "Why is it that Yerushalayim and the mikdash, the kedusha, the first kedusha of Shlomo Melech, was eternal, but the kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, with respect to shvius and maisus v'chayotze behem, lo kitchalased lavo, l'fisha kedushas hamikdash v'Yerushalayim mipnei hashchina." The Kedusha of Yerushalayim in the Mikdash stems from God's presence. God is present in the entire world. His presence is more focused and concentrated in Yerushalayim and in the Beis HaMikdash. That Kedusha is irrevocable. It's not nullifiable in any time, and I would say in any place. And therefore, when Shlomo HaMelech was Mekadesh the Mikdash in Yerushalayim, that Kedusha would be forever. Kedushas Eretz Yisrael can theoretically come and go. But the Shechina, that's the observance of the agricultural mitzvahs, but the Shechina's presence is eternal. And so even though Eretz Yisrael is and should be central in our thinking, we have to never forget that our ultimate Kedusha derives not merely from having a piece of land and not merely from having the agricultural mitzvahs, but rather from the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam, the presence of the Shechina, an awareness of the Shechina, and a proper Avodas Hashem.